When the Codex Group conducted research to find out how powerful Amazon is in the book world, they found that as of March 2014, Amazon dominates with 65% of all new online book units in both print and digital copies. Because they're such a powerful bookseller, they've been able to negotiate the lowest per unit price for authors. And last summer, their negotiations with the publishing house Hachette exposed Amazon to some unwanted publicity. Now, hundreds of writers, including Philip Roth, Salman Rushdie, V.S. Naipaul, and Milan Kundera, have joined together to urge the Justice Department to investigate Amazon for illegal monopoly tactics. In an article called The War of the Words in the December issue of Vanity Fair, Keith Gessen reports on the war between Amazon and Hachette over ebook pricing, and I'm very pleased that it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Didn't Amazon begin on a rather modest scale?
Well, they were certainly working out of Jeff Bezos's garage in Seattle. I don't think their ambitions were ever modest. Bezos had been an analyst at the hedge fund D. Shaw in New York, and he saw, this was in the early 90s, he saw that the internet was growing at a phenomenal pace, and he wanted to get into that business. So but initially, yes, they were selling books out of his garage.
And then and he was getting into a market where there were a number of really dominant companies, Borders and Barnes & Noble. Did he see an opportunity to get past them, to be bigger than them?
Yes. I mean, you know, the question of why Bezos chose books as his initial product is an interesting and sort of vexed question. A lot of people say, well, Amazon doesn't really care about books. But there are two reasons that they got into books initially. The first reason is that when you buy a book, you know what you're getting. It's not something that you need to try on. It's not a pair of shoes. It's not a heavy piece of machinery. It's a book. You know what it is. You order it. It might be, if it's new, it's pretty much exactly what you
order. You may not like it, but that's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other issue. And the second thing was that the universe of books is enormous. There are so many books coming out. It's probably the most diverse product in existence. So one of the advantages that Borders and Barnes & Noble had when those stores opened up, they were the biggest stores that anyone had ever seen, the biggest bookstores.
They were carrying 150,000 books or so in some of their outlets.
Right, and this was just a much wider selection than you could find anywhere. I remember going to a small bookstore in Brooklyn and asking for a book. It was about 10 years ago, and they said, well, we don't have it, but maybe a store down the street, and there was a Barnes & Noble down the street, with a wider selection may have this book. And that just happened a lot. Barnes & Noble had the largest selection, and it started putting these smaller stores out of business. Amazon, because the kind of insight that Bezos had was that online, because you didn't need to carry a physical inventory, you could have an even larger selection. So pretty soon they had more books in their catalog than Barnes & Noble.
Despite the fact that Barnes & Noble dominated for a while, didn't they have just one literary fiction buyer? That gives a lot of power to one person, giving her the means to make or break a new work of fiction.
Right. This was the big complaint. If you talk to publishers about 10, 12 years ago before Amazon became really powerful, they would say, well, you know, there's this one buyer at Barnes & Noble. She decides how many copies of the book they're going to take. You know, the number of books that a bookstore takes is very important, because if a customer comes into the store, the book is not there.
Or it's not on display.
Yes, if it's nice if there's a huge, yeah, big stack of books. And so publishers felt like this one person had a little bit too much power. She could say that she didn't like a cover. She could say she didn't like a title. So this was a big complaint. But this is kind of in the era before Amazon's real rise to power.
Amazon realized that books were a great commodity for e-commerce because they didn't have to keep everything in stock. The system was, I order the book and then they order the book and ship it to me or have it shipped to me?
So initially they were ordering it from the distributors, Ingram and Baker and Taylor, So basically they didn't have any stock on hand. Eventually this became inefficient and they started building their warehouses and having some stock on hand. But the point was simply that they could show you a kind of virtual catalog of pretty much every book that was in print, in a way that Barnes & Noble was limited by their physical space in the store. So, and this later came to be called the long tail. So Amazon could sell just a few copies of a book, but that was okay because they weren't paying to rent a large building somewhere on the highway. So that was how they began to make serious inroads into the bookselling business.
My guest is Keith Gessen, who from 2004 to 2005 was a regular book critic for New York Magazine. He's written about Russia for The New Yorker, the London Review of Books, the Atlantic, and the New York Review of Books. He's a fellow at the Cullman Center at the New York Public Library and the author of an article in the current issue of Vanity Fair called The War of the Words. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Everything started changing with the development of e-readers, and Amazon was there pretty early. 2006, they began meeting with publishers about e-readers. Were there implications to the e-readers that publishers didn't consider?
Yeah, publishers were aware of the possibility of e-readers. They had tried e-readers at the turn of the millennium. It didn't take off. Didn't work. It was not popular. So when Amazon started getting into this in 2006, as you say, I think publishers didn't really take it very seriously. They didn't really know how to think about it. And as Brad Stone writes in his book on Amazon, which came out recently, The Everything Store, publishers did not think about the pricing. So when Jeff Bezos held a media launch for the Kindle, and he said all the books on the Kindle are going to be $9.99 or less. This was a real shock to the publishers, and they hadn't really thought this through.
And they had to go along with it.
They had no choice. They didn't have any price control in the contract.
Were the publishers concerned that the price might even go lower?
Right. So there's two problems with the $9.99 price. One problem is that it's a lot lower than the hardcover price. A typical hardcover is $26, $28. I think the average is $28.
How much of that is goes to the author and to the publisher for doing it, and how much of it is paper and shipping and all the rest of that stuff?
I'm
interested because of the quite a difference between $9.99 and $28.
Well, interestingly, so half of it goes to, when you're selling a hardcover book, half of it goes to the bookstore, right? Mm-hmm. That's half.
That's $14.
That's $14, which is you know, not great for the publisher, but it's great for the bookstore, and publishers really like bookstores, so they don't mind losing that $14. And then it costs $2 or $3 to print a hardcover book, depending on how many you print. The paper cost, that includes the paper cost. The author gets about $4 on a hardcover book.
So it sounds to me like the whole thing is around $9.99. What's the difference?
Good question. The $9.99 has not been bad for the publishers. They have kept the author royalty pretty low. So the publishers, having complained about $9.99 for a long time, recently admitted that actually it wasn't so bad. The trouble is the kind of concept of the value of a book, right? And Amazon is clearly interested in pushing that price as low as they can and selling as many units as they possibly can.
Don't the publishers also lose control because a major task of theirs was getting the books into the stores?
Right. This traditionally has been the value proposition of publishers. This is the thing that you, as an author, you could write the book. You could probably have a friend edit it. You could probably have a friend make a cover design for it. What you really could not do on your own was get it into thousands of bookstores. As those bookstores run into trouble, as we move into the digital future that Amazon is doing so much to create, that value proposition begins to disappear.
And last year, e-books accounted for 27% of the total adult books sold. So we're talking about a burgeoning market here.
It's flattened out a little bit. You know, it went from less than 1% in 2007 when the Kindle launched to, 27%. One thing, so it has flattened out a little bit. One thing that we don't know is that there are hundreds of thousands of self-published authors on Amazon who are publishing directly onto the Kindle. They're publishing e-books directly. We don't know the size of that market. So when you talk to some of the, they call themselves indie authors, the self-published authors, they will tell you that actually that 27% is too low. It should be a bit, it should be over 30. We don't know how large that market is. It's pretty clear that it's going to grow and grow. One of the things that you said at the beginning was Amazon's share of online sales. It partly doesn't matter exactly how big the ebook market is if more and more print book sales are going online, because those are sales that the bookstores are not making. And as the bookstores disappear, if that happens, then we're going to move into a digital future pretty quickly.
And the big box stores that were accused of killing the mom and pops are now being killed by Amazon.
Well, Borders is already gone, as we know. And Barnes & Noble is hanging in there. They have some pretty good leases on their stores, but they are shrinking.
But the battle here is between publishers and Amazon, not just Hachette.
Right. So it's come to a head between Amazon and Hachette. It's unclear, and I was not able to find out what exactly the terms of the negotiation are. But basically, Amazon wants the publishers to stay at $9.99 or below for the e-books. The publishers have been very resistant to this, that seems to be at the heart of this.
What were some of the early tactics tried by publishers to raise ebook prices and force Amazon to rethink how they were doing business?
So one thing that they used to do is they would window a book, like when a movie comes out in the theaters, right? It doesn't come out on streaming for a certain amount of time, right? This gets people to go to the theaters. Although, of course, place like Netflix is now trying to fight this. They would like it to come out in streaming right away.
And we are seeing more VOD.
That's video on demand. Yes, and POD.
Coming out
print
with.
On demand. Yes.
Simultaneously.
So that's shifting. And so the publishers tried to window for a while. That didn't really work because, in a way, your best chance to sell a book is when it has come out. It's getting reviews. And in fact, somebody reading a review online, they're already online. They have a pretty good there's a pretty good chance they will go search for the book online. If they can buy the ebook quickly, that's a sale that you don't want to lose. So the publisher stopped doing that. Then the big thing that happened was that Apple announced that it was going to launch its iPad, and the iPad was going to be something that you could read books on. And they wanted
the iBookstore now,
right? This was in 2009 that they announced it, and 2010 that they launched the iBookstore. In advance of that, Apple started talking to the publishers about how they were going to sell ebooks in the iBookstore. And this was seen as an opportunity, both for Apple, it was seen as an opportunity to compete with Amazon in that space, and the publishers saw it as an opportunity to try to get control of the pricing. According to the Department of Justice, the publishers colluded, talked to one another, and agreed that they were going to raise the price above $99 into the $12.99, $13.99, $14.99 range.
That's five of the six biggest publishers: HarperCollins, Macmillan, Penguin, Simon & Schuster, and Hachette.
That's right. And Random House stayed out. So the publishers say they didn't do this. They talked only to Apple. It's in the end, the Department of Justice did bring this suit against them. There was also a class action suit brought, and the states, the attorneys general brought suits, and the publishers were forced to pay fines and settle. Apple is still fighting it. They lost the first round in court. They're now appealing.
On the other hand, Apple has won another battle because to fight the iPad and such, Amazon came out with Fire, which seems to be one of the biggest misfires in the history of computers. They're selling it now for $99 because nobody wants it.
Oh, the phone phone that they're selling for 99 cents. Yes, but you know, Amazon, they're constantly making stuff. Some of it doesn't work. Some of it works, and they move on. I mean, they're it doesn't seem like quite the catastrophe for a company that is selling so many products, that is making so many products, as it would be, for example, if an iPhone flopped for Apple. But you know, the thing about the lawsuits, just to get back to that for a second, it was really, I think, surprising to the publishers. You know, publishers and independent bookstores have been calling for a long time for some kind of regulatory relief, largely from the discounting that goes on, but, you know, that used to be really wielded by the large chains. They would discount books, and this really undercut the independent bookstores. And, of course, Amazon has done radical discounting that has really hurt the stores.
So the case was said that these publishers were a trust, in effect. It was seen that way rather than Amazon being a monopoly?
Right. So that the publishers had illegally colluded to fix prices. So, you know, it was finally the government gets involved in some way. You know, Andre Schifrin, the late great publisher of the New Press, he used to talk about European countries that have laws against, for example, France has laws against discounting. Germany has laws which keep the bookstores. You know, you go around Germany, there's a nice little bookstore in every little town, and they're protected against the chains. This is not the case in Britain, and it's not the case in the U.S. So people have been calling for the government to get involved in some way for a long time, and then finally they do get involved, but it's on the side of Amazon.
Keith Gessen's article, War of the Words, is in the December issue of Vanity Fair. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Keith Gessen, whose article called The War of the Words is in the December issue of Vanity Fair. And we're talking about the war, which involves Amazon and publishers. When John Sargent, the CEO of Macmillan, threatened to pull titles from Kindle unless new contracts were negotiated, Amazon removed the buy button from Macmillan titles. Wouldn't that be unfair? Wouldn't that be considered a reason for legal action?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, Barnes & Noble, for example, had a dispute with Simon & Schuster. They moved their books to the back of the store. When Amazon itself got into publishing books a few years ago, bookstores, independent bookstores, and Barnes & Noble have refused to put those books on their shelves because they don't want Amazon to compete with them. Is that illegal? I don't know. People got very mad and they backed off very quickly. One of the interesting things about that story, and it's actually in the Department of Justice lawsuit, when John Sargent, the CEO of Macmillan, went to Amazon to say, look, we want you to we want to control the price. We want to change our terms a bit.
Apple was offering them at $13.99.
Well, Apple hadn't launched the iBook store yet, but this was in the future. Yes, they said, we're going to do this thing with Apple, and we want to do the same thing with you. And if you don't like it, then we're going to start withholding eBooks. Amazon's response was, that's a mistake. It's a mistake for us, but it's also a mistake for you. It will be bad for your business. And this is one of the things that I think drives publishers crazy, and it's a kind of problem in these confrontations that they have with Amazon. Amazon believes that they know publishing better than the publishers do. And they think the publishers don't do a very good job at their jobs.
They just lost their top editor, didn't they?
They did that within the small publishing house that they were running. They've lost a few editors. But, Amazon thinks that publishing houses are not particularly well run. I think that's not true.
Now, what happened with Macmillan? Did they resolve it with Amazon so that their books would be bought again?
Yeah, it was only a couple of days, I think, over the weekend, and then the buy buttons came back, and then of course the end result of all these negotiations was that the Department of Justice sued these publishers.
And the publishers are a bit upset because now they feel they have no real avenue to combat Amazon. How did Hachette wind up being the publisher that put up the biggest fight against Amazon?
That's an interesting question. Basically, they were up first with the renegotiation of their contract. These contracts are constantly being renegotiated. I think their term is 1 year, maybe it's 2 years. So when it came time for a new contract, Amazon put forth terms that Hachette felt it could not accept.
So they delayed the shipment of some Hachette titles to customers.
They have delayed shipment. They have stopped discounting many titles, and they have canceled pre-order capabilities for Hachette titles.
And that has angered a wide range of people, from Philip Roth to James Patterson and even Stephen Colbert.
But now I'm not just mad at Amazon, I am mad Prime. Because I just found out that they are deterring customers from buying books by Stephen Colbert. And as any longtime viewer of this show knows, that's me. They're fighting with my publisher, Hachette, and Amazon is playing hardcover.
The tactics Amazon has employed to hurt Hachette are conducted on many fronts, and it's not just not discounting some of their books. They also say that the book will ship in 1 to 3 weeks. So that's discouraging people from buying these books. But doesn't that just send them to Barnes & Noble stores?
The fact that Amazon is not discounting books. Yeah, that's no crime. Some of the smarter retailers, including Barnes & Noble here and there, have tried to promote Hachette books and say, look, we have these Hachette books that you're having trouble getting on Amazon.
Well, when Paul Ryan complained on CNBC about his title being held back, then Amazon started shipping that on time. Also, Catcher in the Rye, Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch. So the books that are going to cause real outrage are the ones that they are allowing to slip through?
I think Catcher in the Rye and The Goldfinch are books that are selling so well, right? You don't mess with Catcher in the Rye.
But they remove pre-order capabilities on Hachette titles.
Right. These are books that are about to come out. You used to be able to put in a pre-order. Now you can't.
Do we know the current nature of negotiations between Hachette and Amazon? Are they talking?
Last I heard, they weren't, but I don't know. Simon & Schuster recently did sign a contract with Amazon. It's unclear whether that contract was the similar contract to Hachette's, which Hachette has refused to sign, or whether Amazon has relented on some aspects of it.
We keep on hearing conflicting stories. Amazon is reported to be asking for more than 30% of the ebook sale, up to 40 or 50%.
Right.
Is that true?
Nobody will say. It's either. So Amazon says, no, our prime objective is to keep the price low. And Hachette says, no, this is about money. So it might be some combination of those things. It might be some kind of either or. But basically, Hachette, all the publishers are in this very tricky situation. Amazon is their best customer, right? Every month or however often it happens, they receive a check, and it's the largest check they receive that month, and it says Amazon on it. So, you know, one simple thing, the literary agent Andrew Wiley has said for a long time that publishers should simply pull out of Amazon entirely. Right, they're not getting very satisfactory terms, so they will sell fewer books, but they will sell them at better terms with other stores, and this will help the bookstores, which publishers claim they want to do. That's not a bad idea, but as one publisher said to me, that's a great idea, but who's going to go first?
And then that led to the war of words that you've used as your title here. A whole group of writers started criticizing Amazon. On the other hand, Amazon started running full-page ads in the New York Times with what seemed to me to be reasonable arguments for their side. Mm-hmm. So is this thing something that can eventually be worked out? Is this kind of like the White House and Congress, where you could see no resolution of a disagreement in the near future?
Ultimately, it does seem like these forces are going to keep colliding, right?
Didn't Amazon come up with a compromise of sorts in July?
No. I mean, Amazon has made various proposals where they say, well, let's leave the writers out of this. Let's give them all the money that they're losing. And usually it's kind of to the disadvantage of Hachette, because Hachette has already paid these writers their advances. But you know, sort of stepping back a bit, Amazon really does want to move into a digital future. The publishers know that while there'll still be things for them to do in that digital future, they'll still want to edit books. They'll still need to market them. They could still pay advances for books. But one of the main things that they do, which is getting books into bookstores, and one of the main ways in which people discover books, right? If you look at polls of how do people find out about books, it's word of mouth, it's reading about it, but it's also walking into a bookstore. Something like 30% of people find their next book by walking into a bookstore and seeing it there. That experience is not really recreated online, although people are trying to think of how to do that. They're working on it. But so publishers are quite reluctant to move into an all-digital future. Amazon wants to move to that future as quickly as possible, and those things are not easy to reconcile.
How significant is it that the fiction editor I mentioned who'd left Amazon has just signed with Penguin?
Not really. There's kind of a people go back and forth all the time.
In the war of words, Amazon was kind of embarrassed when it misquoted George Orwell.
Oh, actually, I disagree. I think they said Orwell was skeptical or worried about paperback books. Actually, I think that's true. George Packer wrote about this, who has written about Amazon and also is the editor of anthology of Orwell's essays. He said, you know, Orwell may not have been right about paperbacks, but that doesn't mean that Amazon is right about ebooks. So, you know, Amazon does try to compare this moment to the moment of the paperback revolution of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. There are some similarities. There are probably more differences.
Of course, we can go back to Gutenberg and people complaining that that was the beginning of the end. Although a lot of famous writers have criticized Amazon, there are some authors who've made a living and had opportunities through Amazon that they might not have had through traditional publishing houses. Books that were rejected that Amazon has published that have become bestsellers.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of these people, and you go online and you read them, and they say, yeah, I sent my manuscripts for years to these publishers, and they didn't like them. They didn't even get back to me, and then I decided to self-publish on Amazon, and now people read my books. And that's a nice story. It's a good story. Right now, we're in this curious moment where actually things are pretty good for authors because you have this competition between these various retailers and publishers. So Amazon, there are these subscription services. There's one called Scrib. There's another called Oyster that are trying to be the Netflix for books. A lot of people are very skeptical of these services. Right now, their terms are pretty good. Whether their terms will continue to be good in the future, no one knows. But so for the moment, you have writers who are doing okay in the traditional system. You have writers who are doing great in the Amazon self-publishing system. You have these other opportunities. This kind of stalemate is actually pretty good for writers. The question is, what will happen 10, 15 years from now?
Can the publishers claim that they're taking the high road? After all, we have seen an incredible amount of conglomeratization within the publishing world. It's almost the development of a couple of monopolies.
Sure. The big five publishers, these are large corporations which are
used to be 100 publishers, and now there are five.
There's still tons of publishers, but yeah, there's an increasing sort of conglomeratization, concentration. Penguin Random House, the new, is not just bigger than the other publishers in the big five. It's almost as big as the others combined. So this is a colossus. The publishers, a place like Hachette or a place like Random House, they publish a lot of junk, actually. A lot of books that I personally would not want to read. They also publish some books that I do want to read. They keep in print a lot of old books and make sure that they're available in stores that I want to read. If you look at some of the books that have been a big deal sort of critically in the past couple of years, actually they're not coming from the big publishers, right? If you look at Knausgård or
Greywolf.
Archipelago. Mm-hmm. If you look at Elena Ferrante, which is published by Europa, right? Coffee House Press is a small press. New Directions is still publishing really innovative books. In a way, it's these smaller publishers that are doing the real kind of experimental and innovative work, and yet some of these books are then picked up and amplified by the big publishers. So there's still a lot of value that they bring.
We have a link to Keith Gessen's article in Vanity Fair, the December issue of Vanity Fair, on our show page at WNYC.org. If you'd like to read the complete story, the article is called The War of the Words, and it has been my great pleasure to have Keith Gessen on our show today.
Thank you.